This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Next Monday, the nation will say thank you to 86-year-old Charles Kettles. President Obama will present the Vietnam veteran helicopter pilot with the Medal of Honor, the military's highest award, for a courageous rescue mission in the heat of ferocious combat. On May 15, 1967, this son of Ypsilanti flew his UH-1 helicopter into heavy enemy fire time and time again to save dozens of soldiers pinned down by the North Vietnamese Army. His Huey was battered by bullets and mortar rounds, but somehow he kept it airborne and accomplished his mission. It is a privilege to welcome retired Lieutenant Colonel Charles Kettles of the United States Army to Stateside. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you.
Before we talk about that day, that mission, I want to talk a little about how you wound up there. I know you were born in Ypsilanti. Had the idea of flying always appealed to you as you grew up?
My father was in the Royal Air Force as a Canadian. Both my parents were Canadian. He flew in World War I with the Royal Air Force in Italy. Canada did not have their own Air Force at that time. Anyway, then he had come across the border in about 1923. My mother had come over here in 16 and moved to Ypsilanti and attended the University of Michigan and graduated. And then he initially worked in Detroit in the Dodge assembly plant. He was moonlighting, giving training to students in aviation. And he, on 8 December of 1941, he went to Romulus, volunteered to come on active duty with the military. He was regarded as old. He was probably about 43 at that point, but regarded as old. So he was put in Air Transport Command to simply move aircraft from point A to point B, wherever that may be. So he spent his whole life in aviation. I grew up thinking that everyone liked aviation.
And my understanding, tell me if I read this wrong, that you actually went to the Edison Institute High School at the Henry Ford Museum in Dearborn?
Yes.
And did you also kind of build your love of flying on the Ford Motor Company Flight Department Simulator?
Yes. Well, my father was flying for Ford Motor at that time. And so I would go over after school and wait for him to finish up the day. We had what we call the blue box and fly that thing.
So it began at an early age. And I know you were drafted when you were 21 for service in the Korean War.
Yes.
And after leaving the active duty, you actually opened a Ford dealership in DeWitt. Could you have seen yourself happily doing that for the rest of your life if Vietnam had not happened?
Not sure how long range I was planning at that point, but
seemed like a good idea at the time.
Yeah, my brother and I had the dealership there.
And then you volunteered in 1963. Why?
Well, the Army was short on pilots. They had spent thousands of dollars, several hundred thousand dollars, training me. I had gone from flight school to Korea, and Korean War was over at that point by about 5 months. Went from there to Japan, from Japan to Thailand, and then back to the States, and nothing was happening, so I got out.
And now something was happening.
Now something was happening, and they were serious, and they needed pilots, and that seemed far more important than being in a dealership.
What drew you to want to pilot a helicopter? I mean, there are so many possible aircraft that call out for pilots.
Most of my background in aviation was fixed wing, and was so when I went back on active duty. But the real need was for helicopter pilots. I was initially sent out to Fort Bliss, Texas. From there, I was sent through helicopter training at Fort Walters and then to France. Spent about a year and a half, I guess, there. And while there, got qualified in the UH-1 in Germany. And then came back to Fort Benning, Georgia, where we formed up the 176 Assault Helicopter Company and went as an entire unit to Tuiwa.
Let's go to May 15th, 1967. What was happening on the ground that day?
The previous day, there was a long-range recon platoon that worked on the hill mass high above where the actual 15th of May took place. It was their job, of course, to get intel. I assume as a result of what they learned, they organized this assault for the 15th of May. So as routine, we used 8 helicopters to insert the troops. And we had D models, which had what we call a Dash 11 engine, which was a little bit weak, but it was a great aircraft. And so then we would insert these troops using the 8 helicopters, about 5-6 troops on board each helicopter, 2 lifts for a total of about 80 troops. And they were ambushed by what turned out to be a battalion-sized North Vietnamese army that was embedded in this hill mass. Probably about 3 hours later, battalion commander called for reinforcements and extraction of the dead and wounded. We took the same 8 helicopters and made 2 lifts for another 80 troops and pulled out the dead and wounded.
Keeping in mind that this was a very hot landing zone at that point. It was like your drop off in the morning.
Yeah. So then late in the day, probably about 18:30 or so, the group was down to 40 infantry troops in that LZ, still under heavy fire. There were 4 helicopter crew members that belonged to me, and they had taken a mortar round on the mast of their helicopter. Bad scene. So they obviously departed, and the helicopter burned in the LZ. At that point, the 176th had only 1 UH-1D lift-type helicopter. Operations coordinated with a 161st of sister company up the road about 30 miles or so to get 5 additional. Ideally, we should have had 8 helicopters go in and pick the 44, but that's all that was available. So we go with what we have. We entered into that LZ in trail formation simply because of the geography and such. Troops, of course, got on the closest helicopter, 2 of them, and I ended up with only 1 person on board mine. But the trail aircraft commander said all are on board. So I gave thumbs up and had the Ray Sechrist, who was my co-pilot, take it out. We departed and climbed in a left turn back toward Duck Fo of the base, which also had hospital facilities, field type, not real heavy stuff. And at about probably 1,000, 1,200, somewhere around there, while the battalion commander, who was up here in the command and control helicopter, said there are 8 troops still down there. Well, they had been down putting up a last-ditch effort to protect the loading troops and didn't get up in time, and the trail helicopter crew couldn't see them.
And I can't imagine what their thoughts were when they realized everybody'd gone.
Well, they've made some comments in statements, which I'm not going to repeat here. Anyway, I told the battalion commander, I will go back in and pick them up. I turned the balance of the flight of 5 helicopters over to number 2 with instructions to simply return them to Duck Fo and the helicopter pads and to the hospital facility. When I got a beam that position, I was in the left seat and I could see them. So I took the controls again and rolled it over into a steep left descending turn and landed right where they were. Almost immediately, a mortar round went off the nose of the helicopter and took out a little bit of each windshields and took out the left chin bubble pretty much entirely, improved the air conditioning. But the troops obviously got on board as fast as they could. There was enough time between when the troops started loading and the mortar round went off that some of them got hit in the back after they'd loaded on the helicopter. I had turned the control back to the co-pilot, told him to move it out. He picked it up, and it began to fishtail badly. For what reason, I'm not totally clear. But anyway, it's my understanding, I learned later, that one of the troops, when it fishtailed like that, got thrown out the left side, and he caught the skid on his way out. His compatriots were able to drag him back in again. So I took the controls again and was able to stabilize it. But because it was so heavy, the helicopter, that is, with the load, because it was much heavier than we would normally carry, it would not maintain a hover nor normal departure. So then I simply started a process of a modified running takeoff. The terrain was such that a running takeoff was not possible. It was down a dry riverbed and rough. So simply pick it up with full RPM and use that to get forward speed. And then the RPM would dissipate. And so I'd set down, put the nose skid back down the ground again, get my RPM back up again, then continue doing this thing, hip-hop.
Almost like a leapfrogging, right?
Well, yes, yeah. Or a jackrabbit.
Yeah.
But anyway, after about five or six of those down the riverbed, why, it flew.
That was some piloting. And you had absolutely, you had no support, no artillery support, no gunship support?
No, they
were
had
on
all
your
left
own.
Because they thought the LZ was clear. So they had closed down, properly so. But I was simply hoping that the surprise to the North Vietnamese Army would be sufficient to get out of there. But whatever, that's all we could do was go back in.
When you were in a moment like that, when you had to come back and you knew those eight men were there, is there any part of your brain thinking, well, I could die at this? Or are you just thinking of what you had to do as a pilot?
I don't think you have the luxury of being concerned about your own welfare. But you've got eight troops down there. Their life is certainly as valuable as mine and the other three that are on board, and four that, in this case, that were on board. The solution was obvious. If I left them there for 15 minutes, they would have been prisoners or dead.
So you go, and your training kicks in as a pilot.
Yeah.
I'm interested in, since the war ended, have you been back to Vietnam? Have you
ever? No. I'm more interested in what's ahead of me than what's behind.
What do you want us to understand about what that whole mission in Vietnam meant to you and what it meant to our country?
Well, we are simply not going to leave someone behind. And the only thing out of all the details that we've just covered and endless and in print, there really isn't anything that matters other than the fact that those 44 got out of there and their names are not on the wall, not at least as a result of that action. Nothing else matters. There's a bond between those in combat that's probably unmatched in any other endeavor, and values that are unmatched. And it's back to, we are not going to leave anyone behind.
Lieutenant Colonel Charles Kettles, retired U.S. Army, we want to thank you for your service. Thank you for what you did over those more than 600 missions you flew in your two tours in Vietnam. And we also want to congratulate you on being awarded the Medal of Honor next Monday by President Obama.
Well, thank you.